All right, so it is at this time, as always, Jason, where I pick up my other notebook that I have here, where I was taking notes earlier today when I watched Aliens. I really, whilst it is a very strange thing to do in the middle of the afternoon to watch a movie, I do really like watching these before we record, because it means that it's the most fresh in my mind. But there is that weird thing where, like, I'm drawing the blinds at 11 a.m. to sit down and watch a movie from 1986. It is very strange, and, like, it is one of those things where it's like, what is this life I lead in which I'm doing this? But this is the life that I have, and I will thank all of our listeners for allowing me to watch Aliens in the middle of the afternoon as part of my job. But here we are. So I will do what I always do. I will give my thoughts before and then my thoughts after, and then we can jump into breaking down some of the parts of the movie. Does that work?
Sure.
So I was very nervous of this movie because I was very upset the first with watching Alien. It made me very uneasy. So I was nervous of that. And you had told me, you had tried to console me and feel better, that this is more of an action movie where Alien is definitely more of a thriller horror movie, and Aliens is more of an action movie, and it's kind of replicated in the director, right? So we had Ridley Scott for the first one, and he's good at making really, really tense environments. And we have James Cameron for Aliens, so it's, you know, James Cameron is more of a big action guy, right? Like, that's what he's more known for, big action movies with impressive visuals.
In many ways, this is the movie that made him a bankable action director. Terminator, the original Terminator, which was low budget, which we watched, was like there might be something to this guy. He looks really interesting. And on the back of the Terminator, he was given Aliens. And then Aliens was a big hit. And this is the thing that propelled him to being like, no, he can make big budget action movies like Terminator 2, for example, and then on and on and on. But this is the one that really like made his name as a big budget, big grossing action movie director.
The budget felt huge for this movie. So IMDb tells me that the budget was $18.5 million is the estimation for the budget. And it felt like a really big budget movie. Like a lot of the practical effects stuff, like the tanks and kind of the environments that they're in, it all felt really well done. And I liked that. I think my favorite thing about this movie is the way everything looked. Everything looked really real, you know, because it was practical stuff. But it also looked convincing. And I thought that was really cool. I liked the overall look of this movie in a way that kind of like Alien was cool, but it was all really contained, you know, within a relatively small environment. And this movie had way bigger environments and way bigger props and spaceships. And, you know, there was a lot more going on in this.
I was struck in watching it this time because I've only seen Aliens once. And that was a long time ago on VHS on a little TV. So I got to see a lot more of the movie this time. And one of the things that struck me, having seen Alien a bunch of times, is I really appreciate how this movie takes its cues from the world that Alien built in terms of what, you know, the future technology looks like on the ship and like in the car and the tank and in the buildings on the ground. Like, I felt like it was of a kind. And then when it makes reference to the monsters and their life cycle, the aliens and what they do, like, that's all, you know, they're honoring that concept. Like, it's a bigger canvas in every dimension, but like, it does sort of feel like they took that little tiny part that we saw in Alien and said, that's the starting point, and now we're going to expand on it, rather than it feeling, if this makes any sense, it feeling like it's a totally different world. Like, I, you know, they expanded on it without making you feel like this is not the same world as the original Alien.
Joe Steele in the chat room has informed us that the tank is a radio-controlled car. But nevertheless, even though it's not... I don't think I thought it was life's... I don't know. But like these things still carry with them an
increased
budget.
There are some shots that made me... There are some shots that made me believe that there was both a model tank and a life scale tank for some shots, and that they cut between them. And I was like, now is this the tiny tank or is this the full size tank? But I don't know. So
yeah, they clearly had something that was part of the set, right? But what was driving around was not this big thing. But nevertheless, like the way this film looks comes with a bigger budget, right? Like it comes with needing to have a bigger budget. I think they had a bigger cost. And I would say overall, this is a really, really good movie. I can see that in watching it. I just don't think it's my movie. Mm. I don't think this is a thing for me. Like, I didn't dislike it. I wasn't bored of it. But there are just parts of it that, like, I just flat out don't like the aliens. Like, I know I'm supposed to not like them. But
well, lots of them die in this one, so that's good.
That's true. But like, I really don't like them, and it makes me not like the movie as much. So like, I don't have particular problems with this movie. Like, I don't have things that like you tend to frustrate me. You know, like typically plot things frustrate me, right? Like weird anomalies in the plot, or like peculiar decisions that somebody would make, right? That's the sort of stuff that usually annoys me about movies. And this didn't really have that for me. Like, there wasn't anything where I was like, well, somebody wouldn't do that. I dislike the aliens so much. They creep me out so much that it pulls me out of enjoying the movie.
They are creepy, and this has the new queen at the end who's like extra creepy.
It makes
she gets in an elevator.
It is. I really wished that there was just me. I want to just see her press the buttons, you know? Like, I want to see that happening. Because if you're going to put it in the elevator, make me watch the alien in the elevator. What's the alien doing? Is it like listening to the
little elevator Nippon music era? That's going on? Yeah. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Yeah, exactly right. And then it's just waiting. Dump, 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 dump. Somebody gets in on the third floor. No, no, I'll take the next one. Doors
you
close
got this
again.
One.
Keeps going up.
You've got all the space taken care of in this one. Yeah. I will say, when I bought this on iTunes, and I was given the option to either play the original or the 1990 special edition, and I chose the original.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, I don't know what the difference is, but like...
So when I watched this the one time, I watched the special edition, and my memory of it is that it was overwhelming. And that I thought this time I would be like, you know what? I'm going to choose the least, the shorter runtime, just because last time I watched this movie, I felt like it was a sensory assault, and that I want to like, I don't need more of that. So let's just take the original and go with that.
This is a long movie. It's like a 2.5 hour long movie, right? Like, which, I don't know, that for movies that we tend to watch for this segment, this is on the long side.
It's 2:17 the original, I think. 2 hours 17 minutes. But it definitely is. I can put it in context for you a little bit. Like, this, first off, this was a huge hit. It's remarkable in the sense that you can see how clever it is to take the original concept and, like I said, honor it and yet also expand it. So because you can imagine what the elevator pitch is. So standing, you know, James Cameron standing next
to
the
alien elevator pitch
in the elevator, saying, okay, imagine that they go back to that planet 50 years later and all of those eggs hatched. Like, oh my God, you mean there was one alien for that whole movie and now you're going to have like 50 or 100 aliens? Well, yeah, that's exactly it. But we're going to have a bunch of space marines with machine guns and flamethrowers, and they're going to fight it out, and it's going to be like a war with the aliens. That's what this movie is. Like, that's it. It is what if we took the claustrophobic spaceship, the Nostromo, and a group of four people and one alien, and instead we made it a semi-claustrophobic housing center down on a planet, but had a whole battalion of space marines and dozens of aliens. and they blow stuff up and shoot and get eaten by aliens, and all that stuff happens. Like, that's what this movie is. And to pivot from the one genre to the other, it's very clever. It's very well done. In looking back at it, I think the issue that I have with it, and this may be going into how you feel about it, is this is a really early example of a what we think of now as a modern, like, summer action movie. This is an early example of, like, movies that they make a dozen of now, which is special effects, science fiction, lots of explosions, lots of gunfire kind of movie. Like, we get these all the time now. And as a result, I actually think I couldn't believe when I was watching this movie that I thought this was an overwhelming, intense experience to watch it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't feel that way. I felt like it was a nice little, I was like, oh, it's so cute. It's a nice little action movie. It doesn't have, like, the plot isn't overstuffed where, like, there are eight twists to get to the end. Like, it's really linear.
It's very simple.
It's there aren't too many characters. It just flows kind of naturally. It's got the one twist at the end that's the same as in the other one, and that's fine, whatever. But it's like, it was more impressive at the time, I would say. And it's so influential, like so many of these old movies you watch, and you're like, oh, it doesn't seem, I don't see what the big deal is. There are lots of movies like this. And you have to say, yeah, but this is the first one, or one of the first ones that did it. And I do think it's a template, and it led to Terminator 2, which I think really is like the prototypical summer science fiction action blockbuster that really set this on a trajectory to where every movie is like that. I mean, I get, like, Star Wars, true, it's true, but like, Star Wars feels a little different. This is the with more explosions and gunfire and personal damage and stuff than you maybe get in a gentler Star Wars kind of movie. This was a rated R, so.
What Terminator 2 has that Aliens doesn't is like an action figure superhero, right? Like, the Terminator is like a sellable action figure cartoon character, right? Where, like, Aliens doesn't have that. It's real human beings dealing with this.
Yeah.
Right, and I think that's one of the big differences.
And of course, Sigourney Weaver at the center of it, doing an amazing job. This is right after she was in Ghostbusters. An amazing job being Ripley again. And there's a great moment where the lieutenant gets, like, bumped on the head or something, and he's a jerk anyway. And then she's just in charge at that point. And by the time he wakes up, it's like, sorry, dude, she's in charge now.
Yeah, she's taken over.
That's why she's there. That it's really good. She finds the little girl Newt, who's the only survivor. She, other than the ones who are, like, webbed up and say, kill me, and they're incubating hosts. But she's the one, like, undoctored survivor. And so she's got, there's like a mother-daughter kind of relationship that's going on while she's got her flamethrower and her gun. But she's also...
I loved that part at the end when she duct tapes the two guns together. It's, like, so extra. I love it. I just loved it. Is that the best way to do this?
And it's a fun collection of characters. You know, you get your collection of Marines, and you know they're all gonna probably die by the end, but you get to kind of get to know them a little bit, and then so you feel something when they're ambushed initially, and then you know, over time they're more of them are gradually killed. I like that there's, again, something I didn't really understand when I watched it the first time, that it's very clear this time, is how Lance Henriksen, who is a Bishop, the android, like, the android is the bad guy in the first movie in Alien, and here she doesn't trust him because he's an android, and she's like, stay away, and he ends up being completely honorable and saves the day in the end, which I think is really cool. Like, that's a great, and it's Paul Reiser, your jovial company representative, who is the rat in all of this, not the android.
Yeah, the difference, I guess, in this movie is that, like, the human is the real villain, right? Where, like, in the previous one, it was a robot, but it's like, it's the human who's the villain this time.
Yeah. Well, because the company is the villain. Yeah. The text of both these movies, a little less in this one, but it's still very clear, is that it's the corporation the Weyland-Yutani Corporation, they are the villains because they don't care about people. They just want to research this alien stuff, like, and use it as a weapon. That's the whole reason. Paul, there is that moment where they're like, it's a classic moment. It's one of the most quotable lines. It's not the most quotable, but one of the most quotable lines from this movie is, I say, we take off, nuke the site from orbit. It's the only way to be sure. And that would have been and Paul Reiser's like, no, we can't do that because it's important. And it's like, no, that's the right answer here. Take off, nuke the site from orbit, end of movie. But of course, that doesn't happen. By the way, I don't know if you know this, the most quotable line from this movie is Bill Paxton, who says, game over, man, game over.
That's the one Bill that everybody, Paxton's performance everybody in this does. Movie.
Well, I mean, he's a whining, freaking out guy. It's kind of awful, but there is that moment where he freaks out and he's like, when they lose the one flying thing that came down from the spaceship, and he just starts freaking out and he's like, game over, man, game over. I like that he's like super panicky guy and they're like, calm down. But yeah, you're not supposed to like him. He's a panicky jerk.
I love all of the like 1980s view of the future. I love this stuff.
Oh, God, yeah.
Right, so, yep. Like, there's that meeting at the beginning, and everyone's smoking and using pen and paper. It's like...
Everybody's smoking indoors, they're using pen and paper, and there's a line about how a spaceship costs $14 million. And I just cackled. I was like, this is the most 80s thing ever. Like, $1 million spaceship and the smoking indoors and the pen and paper. It's just hilarious. Like, yeah, this is the things that you don't bother to imagine what it would be like in the actual future. Just like, it's a meeting. There's some, you know, computer screens on the walls. There's also a moment that you probably noticed where they're looking at a map and it's on a screen which looks really cool. It's like a flat screen, but it's down. It's on the table. It's like a table screen. It's got the map of the complex in it, and they want to like move around on it, and so they have to do like computer things to move the map. And I'm like, no, you just reach out and pinch.
I love watching this stuff. Like, I don't think that there is a specific problem that people from the 80s have no imagination, right? Because I imagine that, like, in 30 years' time, the stuff that we're doing in future movies will look just as ridiculous. Like, oh, they didn't know you could just imagine it, right? Like, or like whatever, you know, like whatever it ends up being. But like, it's just always funny to be like, what did people think that, like, I mean, how far in the future is this even set? Because like, it's 57 years after the first one.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an unstated far off future. You know, a couple hundred years probably. And it's the what gets me is that mixture, which is like, okay, they've got a flat screen on a table with a readout on it. That's like a live map. And like, actually, a thing that they did really well that I liked is that all the soldiers have cameras and they've got like a control center where they can see the video from all the soldiers. It's like, yeah, that's good job. That's I think you kind of nailed it. That's a really good vision of like future soldiers and tech. And they've got the control center, but they've got that screen with the map, and it's like a flat plane of glass. It doesn't look like a CRT, I think. And I thought, wow, that looks really good. But it looks so good that I expected them to touch it like an iPad. And they don't, because that conception didn't get to them, or the other thing is like, how much money and time do we want to spend having the actors put their fingers on the glass and miming that, you know, tracking that perfectly with our computer? It's like, it's not worth it. Let's just not do that. Sometimes it might not be a lack of vision. It's just a lack of the budget to realize other parts of the future. And that's true. It's less true now when we've got amazing VFX to rewrite almost everything you see on screen if you've got enough money again, but it's a different kind of thing than it was back in the day where they had to do a lot of stuff, you know, practically and just stay inside the budget.
I also really liked the exosuits, the loaders. That's really cool.
Yeah, James Cameron liked them too, because he brought them back in Avatar. But yeah, right. Where it's people in exosuits, but that's a nice use of the. It seemed extraneous at the time, where she's like, "Yeah, I can load things. I worked at the loading docks in a mentioned in a previous scene. I will move something around," and it shows her character-wise makes sense. She's earning a little more respect from these Marines who have no respect for her as this civilian who's been asked to tag along with them, who they don't know. But of course, it pays off at the end where the door opens and she's in the exosuit and she's gonna punch an alien.
A really awkward, drawn out fight scene. Like,
yeah, it goes on too long.
Really happening. Like, there's a tail whipping and she's kind of holding the alien's head a bunch, right? But like,
there's some great moments where she grapples and the alien's face is near her, and you know the alien opens its mouth and that other like little sub mouth comes out and tries to snap at her, and you're like, ah, right, that was so great. But yeah, by modern standards, that is a really slow sequence where there's just sort of some grappling, and it's not nearly as, I think, tense as that they wanted it to be, maybe, mm-hmm. or at least as we read it today. But again, back in the day, it was a big turn.
I thought that the fashion decision to kind of like upturn the top of the collar and lapel on suit jackets was very strange. This like looked really weird. It's like, oh, in the future, this is how we wear our suit jackets. It was very... It's a very, very strange decision.
I mean, it's like Back to the Future too, where it's like, okay, I guess it's just like, let's just do wacky things and we'll say that's future.
Oh, I enjoyed the Back to the Future 2 escape scene at the end of the movie, where like, you know, the whole building's falling down and there's no spaceship anymore, and the spaceship just appears from behind her.
Yeah, and he says, "Oh, I had to take off. It was getting too unstable. I just had to take off because, you know, they're preparing to die there." Uh-huh. And he's like, "No. I just was, rather than hovering over the platform, I decided to go somewhere where you couldn't see me and just come back at the opportune time. But I'm back now."
The guy who played Corporal Hicks, his name is Michael. How do you say his surname? Is it Bine?
Bean. Michael Bean.
So he was in Terminator 2, right? Terminator also.
Yes.
That was interesting. Clearly Cameron likes him.
Well, he's the guy from the future who sent back in time.
Yep.
And fathers John Connor in the Terminator and then dies, and it's sad. They had the one night together and that's all. And
the really awkward one night.
And he's the Abyss. He's actually the bad guy, if a bad guy there could be, a single bad guy in The Abyss, which is a James Cameron movie from 1989, which I love and I would recommend that we watch at some point.
Okay.
The downside of it is that the theatrical edition has a really dumb ending and the special edition has an amazing ending and is a much better movie. It's also very long. And the special edition hasn't been released in HD. I don't know why. I think because James Cameron's too busy with Avatar movies. And it really frustrates me because I love The Abyss special edition. It is amazing. And it kills me that it's not available in an HD version because it is great. Anyway, he's the bad guy in that. He's a Marine who kind of goes crazy in the high pressure situation at the bottom of the seafloor and steals a nuclear bomb and is carrying it around for a while. So yeah, James Cameron really likes Michael Bean and put him in a lot of stuff.
So, you know, there were lots of aliens, almost too many aliens. Like, there was just aliens constantly. Like, that was one of the big differences, right? There was one alien, and it was like the tension of the one alien. But this time, there's just like how many, at some points, how many aliens can there be on screen? We'll have all the aliens. But, you know, I guess that's more of what this movie was going for, right? It's more action to be just shooting guns at like 50 aliens.
If you've seen Alien and then you see that scene where suddenly you see them all kind of like coming off the walls and the ceiling, it is a moment of like, oh God, no. Like, they're,
I did feel like
only
that.
One killed everybody, you know, but the cat and the one lady, only one. And now there's just, they're everywhere. And there's that, that scene where they're like beep, beep, beep. And it's coming closer. And then it's like, but I don't see them. And they look up and it's like, no, they're everywhere.
Aliens falling from the ceiling.
Yeah. My moment is the alien in Alien was so hard to kill and they just plow through these aliens. And you have to remind yourself, it's like, well, yeah, but these guys have like flamethrowers and giant machine guns. So, which the crew of the Nostromo didn't really have.
And also, and so, like, they know these aliens exist now. So, like, they might know enough about them, maybe, possibly, to know, like, these specific weapons will be good. Like, this is what
But nobody has is. Nobody has formulated any acid proof armor yet.
Isn't that a nice complication? Yeah, because that wasn't really explored. I mean, we knew the acid was dangerous, right?
Right, it burned through the hull.
But it wasn't explored as like a, if you shoot one of these and you're too close, your skin's going to melt.
Yeah,
and I really
totally
like that.
Splattered by acid. Yeah, no, I like that a lot. That's an added complication where it's like, yeah, it's fun to shoot these aliens, except if they splash on you, you will be horribly injured. Like Hicks, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, they have to carry him out because he's been horribly burned by acid.
I mean, there are a couple of the Marines who were basically killed by it. I don't remember their names exactly, but like that, you know, one guy has his entire face melted off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Right. It's just the Hicks survives. He gets splashed a little bit, but he's still horribly injured because we know that that's that monomolecular acid or whatever that just eats through many. And there is a callback to that, which I really like, where they find the hole that is going all the way down and all the way up. And it's like, oh, yeah, we've seen this before, an alien. Mm-hmm. This is proof that these aliens are there. I really like the tension at the beginning when they come into that. That setup is so great. It's like, we've landed. We're on an alien planet. We know there's probably aliens here, but there are also people here. We've lost touch with this facility. We don't know what happened to the people. And they're like going through and there's like, I love that whole segment. The fact that they go through the doors and like stuff's pulled out of the ceiling and stuff. And it's like, what happened here? Like, it's a mystery at that point. Like,
yeah,
there's
half-eaten meals, right? Like, so, you know, it happened like all of a sudden, that kind of stuff is cool.
I really like that. And then, you know, in the end we find out that they all got killed other than the girl in the ventilation ducts. They all got killed.
On that last thing that I wanted to mention was I really liked the actual beginning of this movie because it moves very quickly. Like, you are not waiting around a bunch for like something to happen to Ripley. Like, she is saved. You see that she gets back to health. You know she's having bad dreams, right? So it gets like kind of the fake out there. She presents her case. They say, no, you're not going there. And then like jump cut. Right, like multiple years later, or however long it is, now they're going. Right, and I like that because I was expecting, like, oh, here we go. Like, there's going to be a bunch of committee meetings, or like, you know, where she's like pleading her case, and then there's going to be this. But they're like, nope, you got to go. Everyone's dead.
The only problem I have with those scenes is that I feel like she's, I mean, and I guess it's like, what did Ripley learn when she was on the Nostromo? But we know that the company was behind it all. And she mentions it at one point, but it's like she is not nearly adversarial enough when she's in that meeting with the company. She should have been like, I know what you guys did. I know what the android's job was. We were sacrificed. Those people died because of you. Like, I wanted her to be way more aggressive because she knows what happened and that it was I understand that the movie doesn't want to do that. Because the movie wants to like slow play that and then have the company guy, have Paul Reiser be totally like, you know, he's kind of squirrely, but then we find out that he's really bad. And it's like, oh, yeah, right. This corporation is terrible. But that's the one problem I had with it is that Ripley should be aware all the time at how terrible the company is and be pushing back. And, you know, they can use their power to kick her out and disgrace her and all of that. But that scene played more like they were not believing her and she was kind of in good faith trying to explain what happened. When I felt like that's not how I picture that scene going. I picture that scene going that she knows full well what went on. She's aggressive about it. And they shut her down because they don't. First off, all those executives retired. It was 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. And second, they've got plans and her plans don't interest them. And she's just going to get in their way. So I just, that's the frustration I had is she should have started out considering the corporation, the villain. And that might've made the dynamic between her and Paul Reiser when he finally has to try to recruit her because she knows something about this to be a little more adversarial. And for whatever reason, I think James Cameron just didn't want to go down that path because like, that's what Alien's all about is that all of those people got screwed by the company. So anyway, that's a complaint I've got about the beginning of the movie, but you're right. It does move fast. I also want to complain about the end of the movie. Can I do that?
Yeah.
Or after the end of the movie, which is, and I'm going to spoil something for Alien 3, which you should not watch. So I'm going to spoil it now. Don't watch it. I hate that movie. I'm going to spoil it now, though, which is the entire emotional arc of this movie is that Ripley saves Newt. And this movie ends in victory with, yeah, Bishop's been ripped into and has milk coming out of every surface, but he saves Newt from falling out of the airlock, and they go into suspended animation, and they've managed to save Hicks, who's injured, and they all go into suspended animation, kind of like the end of Alien, and it's a victory. She has taken care of Newt, who she promised to save, and they've got that relationship there, and it's great. Alien 3 begins with the pod being found on a planet, and they wake Sigourney Weaver up and say, oh yeah, everybody else is dead. So, and this okay. is, and also, oh, and one of you had an alien facehugger on you, but we don't know which one, which is not supported in Aliens at all. It's just made up. And so I got to see that movie. I reviewed that movie for my college newspaper. I think it is amazing that a franchise on the back of an incredibly successful movie would in its first scene extend two middle fingers at the entire fan base of the franchise and the entire mm-hmm. audience who is coming to see this movie and say, remember that emotional arc that was the entire point of that last movie? Well, forget it. She's dead. Let's move on. Let's tell a movie now. And it's like, it's one of the most inexplicable decisions, creative decisions in a movie, and especially in a movie series I have ever seen. That literally the Alien franchise said, hey, you know Ripley's relationship with Newt? It didn't matter. She died on the way back to their planet. And now Ripley's in another thing with stuff that we're going to gaslight you and tell you happened in Aliens, but it totally didn't happen in Aliens. It's terrible. That's from David Fincher's first feature film. I believe David Fincher is on the record in saying nobody hates that movie as much as he does. But it's a disaster. So I don't recommend, Mike, I don't recommend you watch any more Alien movies.
Great.
This is it.
I'm happy about that because they give me the heebie-jeebies.